This recording is a production of Faith Builders Resource Group. This recording was made at Reach 2019, held on March 22 and 23, 2019, in Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
Thank you for showing up. I expected a small group for a talk like this. So when you dive into some of these more technical aspects of bookkeeping, the number of people that are dealing with it becomes very small. But I just want to bless you this afternoon for the role that you play in our ministries. I'm convinced that without the wide array of people that are involved in the back office, the work on the front can't happen. And so I bless you for the work that you play, or the role that you play, the work that you're doing for nonprofits. So this afternoon we're going to be looking at receipts. And the title said something about growing your ministry through proper receipting. How does proper receipting play into growing your ministry? We'll get to some of this at the end, but a big part that receipts play is just an expression of gratitude and an expression of accountability to the ministries, or I'm sorry, to the donors who are donating to your ministries. And so without donors, ministries really don't exist. As they'd, you know, as you could say, happy donors, happy ministry. You're not going to have one without the other. So, we dive in with some an excerpt from IRS publication 1771. Straight from the IRS's regulations, they say that donors must have a bank record or written communication from a charity for any monetary contributions before the donors can claim a charitable contribution on their federal income tax returns. This is really kind of in a nutshell why we're talking about this issue. Now, a couple of things that I wanted to point out in this quote. One is, it says that donors must have this record. It does not say that ministries must provide it. It says donors must have it in order to write off the donation. It might come as a surprise to you, but donation receipts are the responsibility of the donor, not the ministry. There's only one case that I could find, which we'll address later, where ministries can actually legally be required to give a donation receipt. Most of the time, this responsibility is actually on the donor to get a receipt so that they can deduct it on their taxes. Obviously, you want to give them what they need to get that deduction, but just to establish that this is actually something that is a requirement for the donor. So it does take some of the weight off of the ministry to make sure that they for sure get this right. Am I going to get in trouble with the IRS? No, your donors might, but you won't as a ministry generally. Second quote, I'm sorry, in the first quote I wanted to point out that they must have either a bank record or written communication from a charity, and they must receive, basically this indicates, because they have to have either bank record or written communication, if they give a cash donation, and we're talking hard cash. Most of my examples, that when I use the word cash, I'm normally referring to, you know, cash, checks, credit cards, something other than stuff that donors donate. But in the case of actual currency, they must receive a written acknowledgement from the charity because there is no bank record. And so that's, yeah, kind of a simple concept there, but that is something where all donations that are actual currency must have a written communication. Donors are responsible for obtaining a written acknowledgement from a charity for any single contribution of $250 or more before the donors can claim a charitable contribution on their federal income tax returns. The important part of this is any single contribution of $250 or more. So for a donation that's $250 or more, bank records are not sufficient. It used to be they were, but a number of years ago that changed to where now you must have a receipt for all donations that are $250 or more. Now, this is any single contribution. This is not in the aggregate. So if you have a donor that gives $200 a month, you know, they give $2,400 a year, they actually can use their return checks as their substantiation when they go to write it off their income tax return, because each individual donation was under $250, even though the aggregate for the year was over $250. So this refers only to each individual donation must be $250 or more. Now, what are the elements of a valid donation receipt? There are four of them that I will mention. I think I actually put three lines on your handouts. I apologize. You shouldn't prepare the handout before you prepare your presentation, right? So anyway, there's a bit of a change there. But the first is the name of the organization. So to be a valid receipt, you must have the name of the organization on the receipt. You must have the amount of cash that was contributed. And you must have a statement that no goods or services were provided by the organization in return for the contribution, if that was the case. Those are the three most common ones. The name of the organization, the amount of cash that was contributed, and a statement that no goods or services were provided in exchange for the gift. In the event that you do have a material contribution, someone donates a computer, someone donates office supplies or something like that, you need to provide them with a receipt that has a description. Or I'm sorry, if you gave them, I was thinking that was what I was going into next. We'll get to material donations later. But for cash donations, if you gave them something in exchange for their gift, you must include on the receipt a description and a good faith estimate of the value of the goods or services if you provided something in exchange for the gift. So if you say that for every donation of $75 or more, you'll get a free copy of the founder's book that's autographed by the founder. Okay, now on his on the donation receipt, in order for that to be valid, you must list how much the approximate value of the item that was given in exchange for that gift. And if there were religious benefits that were given in exchange for the gift, you should put a statement on there stating that any goods or services that the organization provided in return for the contribution consisted entirely of intangible religious benefits. Now, what are intangible religious benefits? So, IRS examples that they give are things like admission to a religious ceremony. So, the heating bill at your church. So as a member of the church, you give donations to the church and you expect to be able to write them off, but in exchange, you get a nice warm place to have your Sunday morning service, or your children get baptized, maybe the pastor performed the wedding ceremony for you. Those are what's called intangible religious benefits. You do not need to decrease your donation deduction simply because you receive the benefit of those intangible religious benefits. They also mention things such as wine used in a religious ceremony and so forth. So the value of that does not need to be listed as a reduction of the donation. One of the things that the IRS specifically says is that it gives as an example of items that are not intangible benefits is education leading to a recognized degree, or travel services or consumer goods. I find it interesting that they specifically mention education that leads to a degree. One of the questions that I get frequently from churches is, we have a school and the school is supported entirely through donations. Can I give donation receipts for the full amount that people donate to help support the school? Be really careful with that. The IRS specifically states benefits are not intangible religious benefits include education leading to a recognized degree. Now, it sounds as though they're targeting colleges, and I think they are, where you can't give a donation to a private college and get a donation receipt for, and then they let your child attend for free. That's not okay. So they are shooting at colleges. However, my argument would be that K-12 education is very close to the same thing. And so I would be very hesitant about saying that you can write off your entire donation if you're giving money to a church and to support the school that your child attends. Now, if the school says that, well, on average it costs about, $3,000 a child to educate our children in our school, then, and you give $5,000 and you have one child in school, no problem with the additional $2,000 being written off. I would have a bit of a problem if you would write the entire $5,000 off. Does the IRS say it's strictly prohibited? No. However, I would say It is a gray area, but I would say that approaches the line. It would be more, it'd be closer than I would feel comfortable with to getting a benefit in exchange for the donation that you're giving. So, these are the basics. How important is this? Well, there was a case, Durden versus United States of America. There was about $25,000 in donations that were given to the local church, and the IRS was auditing his return, and the IRS agent said, you don't have a valid receipt from the church for these donations because the receipt did not have the wording that no goods or services are given in exchange for this gift. So the donor said, oh, that's unfortunate. So he went back to his church and said, hey, can you give me the right receipt? And the church said, sure, here you go. So he went to the auditor and said, all right, now I have the receipt that I need. And the auditor said, I'm sorry, it's not contemporaneous. You can't use it. And they actually disallowed the deduction. This is one of those cases where the judge said, we don't doubt that you gave the money. We don't doubt that it was given to a church. We don't doubt that it was deductible. But you did not get the right receipt. The regulations say you have to have a receipt. I'm sorry, no deduction. Now, I mentioned contemporaneous. What does that mean? You are required to, I'll get into this a bit later, but you are required to, within a certain period of time after the donation is given, you must give a receipt to the donor. The donor must receive the receipt. And so if it's not within that window of time, unfortunately, the IRS can disallow the deduction. So I'm going to run through a few examples of receipts just to give you an idea of how some organizations do this. Yes, question?
You were saying that if there's education involved, that mm-hmm. leads to a recognized degree.
Mm-hmm.
So at SMBI, we have graduates, but their degrees are not necessarily recognized as a mm-hmm. credit. But credits can be transferred to colleges that do.
Right. Okay.
So if people give, they're not receiving it per se themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So you can still write that off because you're not receiving it, even though the student is using it as an educational thing to get.
That's correct, yes. And the biggest question is who's getting the benefit from it. So if I'm giving to a charity and they decide to give money to someone else, that's completely fine. If I'm giving with the expectation that I will be getting a benefit, now that becomes the problem. So, is it something where I am personally receiving a benefit from the gift that I'm giving, and by personally receiving it also includes family members and so forth. So parents giving a large donation to SMBI so that their child can attend for free, now you have a problem. Parents giving to SMBI and their child gets charged the same rate as everybody else, not a problem. The biggest question is there something given because of the donation that was received? Is when it would become non-deductible. Excellent question. Yes?
We have clients and friends want to pay for their counseling services.
Mm-hmm.
So can they get a tax deductible receipt because they're specifying points to be used for?
Okay, so we have a case of someone giving a donation for, wanting to call it a donation to pay the expenses of someone else getting counseling. No, I would say that could not be deducted. And the main reason is because it's specified for an individual, and it's essentially the same as if you were giving a gift to an individual, which would not be tax deductible. One way of making that deductible would be to have like a scholarship fund or to have a needs fund where low-income people can receive assistance from this fund. People can donate to that fund, and then individuals can receive assistance. The difference there is that the organization has control over how the money is used. And so the big issue there is control. Who has control over how the money is used? And so if the donor has control, that becomes problematic. Generally, it's not deductible. Versus if the organization has control, they give to this pool of funds that can then be used for their friend and others, whoever qualifies, that would be fine. But yeah, not. And the same thing relates to school tuition. So can I give a donation to my church and then my church pays the tuition for one of the families in our church? That's not okay either. Or I want to give to the school to pay their tuition and I want to get a donation receipt. It's not a donation. That's a personal gift to an individual. Excellent questions. Are there other questions at this point?
Well, if a grandparent wants to get money to pay the school tuition for their granddaughter.
You have the same situation. Yeah, grandparents and so forth. Now, if the grandparents want to support the school because their children are in school, yes, they can give a donation to the school. That's not a problem. But if it's with the expectation that their grandchildren are getting a discount or are getting free tuition because of that, no, that would not be.
The school's charging tuition to the patients.
Right.
And part of the church that lifts regular monthly offerings for the school.
Mm-hmm.
That would be for the school. That's mm-hmm.
That would be fine if they're helping to subsidize the school. Yes, that's fine. Where you run into issues is where it's specific. You know, I want my money to be used for the benefit of this person. That's not deductible. Versus, you know, to help the entire school for everyone, and that can be deducted. So some specific examples. Here's an organization you may have heard of. So this organization, I mentioned the critical pieces of a receipt. We have the name of the organization. We have the amount, which is blacked out here, but they list the amount there. And then they have their little phrase down here, donee has not provided any goods or services in consideration for this contribution. That would be a valid receipt with those three elements. Here's a different one. This one, very similar. We have the organization's name. We have the amount, and they get a bit more verbose in the wording down here saying that they have exclusive legal control and so forth, but the essence of it is that any goods or services received in connection with this gift are solely intangible religious benefits. If they choose to go that route, instead of saying no goods or services were provided, they say if there were any benefits, it would have been merely intangible religious benefits. Third example, again, we have the organization's name. We have the amount contributed, and we've not provided you with any goods or services in exchange for this contribution. Please retain this document for your records and so forth. So, three critical things on the receipt: the name of the organization, the amount of cash contributed, the statement that no goods or services were provided. Now, there are quite a few other things that I say are a really good idea, but the official Internal Revenue Code does not actually say that they're required. One of them is the date. And I was getting conflicting information from different IRS publications. Some said you have to have a date. Other IRS publications didn't mention it. And so I actually went back to the code and looked at that, and it lists what you must have, and date is not in there. So it's definitely a good idea, but it's not actually required. Now, date. What date? What date are we using? Most common one, postmark date. You're all familiar with that rule. You know, the postmark date is the date you use. Increasingly, I'm seeing checks from banks. You probably get them in your organization where somebody does online banking. You get a check from the bank. They send them out pre-sorted standard mail or pre-sorted first-class mail. There is no postmark. In a case like that, the check date is really about the only thing you can go by. Most of the time, the bank, I've often seen where the bank will actually date it the date they expect you to receive it. Like, you'll receive it and it'll be dated that day, so you know that it was probably mailed a few days earlier, but you go by the check date. One of the reasons is because if there's a check that is dated out ahead, you have to go by the check date, not the postmark date. So if someone mails a check on December 31st of 2017, and the check date they wrote on there is January 5, because they wanted to make sure you hold it until at least January 5, but they wanted to get their donation deduction for last year, I'm sorry, you can't do that. Now, they can include a little note saying, please hold the check, and technically, that probably should be considered a donation when it is unrestricted, like when you are actually allowed to deposit it, but yeah. You know, it's not a big deal. There's really no tracking there. But if they actually post-date the check, the date on the check would actually be the date of the donation. So, date is definitely a good idea. A description of the purpose for which the donor gave is definitely a good idea. One of the reasons that I would strongly encourage a description, putting a description of the purpose or the fund on the receipt, It's for two things. One, it communicates to the donor that it holds you accountable, and so the donor can come back and say, hang on, I actually wanted it to be used for this purpose. Maybe they didn't put it on their check. Maybe they thought you would know. Maybe they talked to a board member about a need and said, sure, I'll send a check, and the board member didn't communicate with the treasurer, and so the treasurer thought it was general operating because there was no indication on the check. Putting this on the receipt allows the donor to see it and say, wait, I actually wanted it used a different way. This also is a communication to the donor that we care about what you want. We're putting forth the effort to make sure that we use your funds the way you want us to use them. So putting on a description of the purpose for which the donor gave is a good idea. Signature can be a good idea. Signature allows you to a little more evidence that this is a valid receipt for the donor. But a lot of ministries don't do signatures on their receipts, and it's not required. Sort of up to what your process is. Back to our three examples that we used earlier. This one actually hits all six, so I pointed out the other three, but we do have the date up here. In this case, they use date received. Normally, I would encourage using just date. Just put date, not date received, because you're going to be using postmark date, not the date you actually received it. This one I happen to know was actually a bank transfer, and so the date it was given, the date they received it, was all the same thing. So date received makes sense. They also indicate the purpose that it was to be used for. And they have a signature on there. This signature is actually printed on. They don't sign all their receipts. You can tell that it's printed on by the computer, which is fine. This receipt, again, we have the date. We have the reason, purpose for giving. Also have the check number. This one happened to be an online donation, but normally there would be a check number in that field. That can help the donor to establish, you know, if he wrote out several checks in the same month, okay, you did get them all, and, you know, here's the check numbers. Be a good idea. Receipt number is simply a way of tracking it in the books of the ministry. If there was ever a question, is this a valid receipt, the ministry can look it up based on the receipt number. Again, we have another example of a receipt where they have the date. Again, they have the check number. This simply says contribution. Most likely was a general operating donation, and so it was just listed as a contribution, and they have a signature at the bottom. So those are some examples, some items that are crucial, some items that aren't crucial but are a good idea, can be a way of keeping accountability with your donors and so forth. A few comments about timing, and I did mention that donation receipts must be what's called contemporaneous. What does contemporaneous mean? Well, for contemporaneous, a receipt must be acknowledged by the donor must receive the receipt by the earlier of either the date they file their tax return or the date that their tax return is due, including extensions. So they must receive the receipt by either the date the tax return is filed or by the due date of the return, including extensions. You don't know what date your donors are going to file their tax returns. So if you do annual receipts, which you can either give a donation receipt for each donation or you can give an annual receipt. I don't have to tell you that donors would like to have it as soon as possible in January. You know, if you're going to give an annual receipt, try to get it out as soon as possible, because in order to be a valid deduction, they should actually have it by the time they file their tax return. So for the good of the donor, make sure you get that out. I will also mention that even though I established at the beginning that it's the donor's responsibility to get a receipt, you're the expert on the receipting. They don't know what they need. And so when they give to a ministry, they expect the ministry to know what they need to make sure that it's deductible. And so, you know, but definitely best practice to give them valid receipts that they can use for the tax deduction. So a couple of special circumstances that I want to run through that you may or may not encounter. I'm not going to get into all the technicalities of all these special circumstances. Some of them can get very technical, especially when you get into vehicles and some things like that. My goal this afternoon is to give you a window into what it may be required in the event of those special circumstances. So most of the time, what's more helpful than to know that, well, in this particular situation, I need to file this form and do this thing and, you know, whatever, is to know that if this situation comes up, there's something extra that needs to be done. Okay, at that point, you can talk to your accountant. You can research it or whatever and know that, figure out what the extra work is to be done. One of them that's probably the most common of the special circumstances I'll be describing is material donations. So when you have someone who gives something other than money, what are the requirements? IRS says you should describe the item donated. And further, they say don't place a value on the item. Now, why would they say that? If your donors are like a lot of those that I've worked with, they would like you to put the value on. They say, well, it was worth this amount, so could you just put that on the receipt? Here's the problem. The value, that would do two things. Number one, that would mean that the charity would need to now be the appraiser. Suddenly the charity has to look at the item and say, yeah, I think maybe it's worth this amount and so forth. The donor is responsible to establish the value. He's responsible to maintain enough documentation, whether that's pictures of the thing he donated or whatever, receipts if he just bought it and donated it right away, a copy of the purchase receipt and so forth would be sufficient. The donor is responsible to establish the value. Your responsibility is to give a receipt that shows a description of the item that was donated. And I would also say that if you were to place a value on the item, it could be misleading when they go to file their tax return. They give the receipt to their tax preparer and say, here's the amount of my write-off, and the tax preparer sees the receipt and says, oh, there's a value on it, uses the value, and goes on. Here's the problem. For donors who donate material donations, their donation is limited to either the fair market value. In other words, they can't give something, claim a deduction when the value of the item they donated is much lower. They also can't claim a deduction for more than what they paid for the item. So if someone goes to an auction and gets a real steal on something and then donates it to charity, he can't take the fair market value. He can only take the amount that he actually paid for it. So by putting a value on the donation receipt, you're somewhat misleading as to how much their deduction could be, because they can only deduct the lower of either the fair market value or what they actually paid for the item, their basis in the item. But all that being said about material donations, when I worked for Faith Builders, we did have some donors who on a regular basis would be donating food supplies, for example, where there was a fairly clear value of the item that they were donating, and they really wanted a value placed on the receipt so that they could track, you know, how much they've been giving and so forth. So we ended up putting this clause on the bottom of our receipts there at Faith Builders. Federal income tax law requires donors to establish the fair market value of donated material items. Amount stated on this receipt has been established by the donor and has not been verified by Faith Builders. Basically, what we're saying is, we put a value on here because that's what you told us to put on. We're not responsible. We didn't establish that this is the actual value. We simply put on what you put on, essentially to help them with tracking their receipts. So this is something that, in my opinion, could be, you know, a legal way of dealing with this kind of a compromise. But in general, best practice is to not put a value, only describe the items that are donated for material items. Material donations that exceed $5,000 in value, an appraisal is required. So you do have to have an actual appraisal of those items. It must be an appraisal by a qualified appraiser. So, somewhat amused by the IRS statement when they said the weight given to an appraisal depends on the completeness of the report, the qualifications of the appraiser, and the appraiser's demonstrated knowledge of the donated property. The appraiser's opinion is never more valid than the facts on which it is based. Without these facts, it's simply a guess. So what they're saying is the appraiser needs to do his job. Otherwise, he's just guessing. We're not going to allow you to take the donation. We're not going to allow you to take that value. The IRS can challenge donations of items, can challenge the value. Where that is most commonly done is where, like, an estate donates a painting and they say it's worth however many million. Okay, now where's the proof? Where's, you know, do you have a qualified art appraiser that appraised this and so forth? Not often that you would come into to circumstances like this. However, one that I have encountered is actually a property where a property was donated to charity and then sold. So in that case, there did need to be an appraisal. Form 8283 must also be attached to the donor's tax return. This form is basically, there's a section of that form where the appraiser needs to fill it out and sign it and so forth. I have kind of a copy of it. Don't expect you to be able to read it, but essentially there's information about the property, kind of a description of the property and so forth, the appraised value and so on, as well as then a declaration of the appraiser where the appraiser is signing, saying that this is a valid appraisal and so forth. In the case that I mentioned where someone donated land and then the land was resold immediately or was sold immediately by the charity, the person who facilitated the sale, instead of getting an appraisal, they wrote in by the signature line that they used the selling price in lieu of appraisal, which kind of intrigued me. But the firm that was facilitating that said they've used it in the past and it seems to be fine. In other words, what they're saying is this particular item was sold so quickly after it was donated that the value has not changed substantially, and so it seems reasonable to use the actual selling price instead of getting an appraisal done. That's not, to my knowledge, that's not in the instructions from the IRS, but it does seem to work, and sometimes what's practical trumps what's in the regulations. So, whatever that's worth. Quid pro quo donations. Now I'm starting to speak Latin. Frankly, that's a Latin phrase that means this for that. So, this is the one case where ministries are actually required to give a donation receipt, and that is when a donation exceeds $75 and goods or services were given in exchange for the gift. So if someone gives cash donations of $75 or more and you give them an article, a book, or something in exchange, you are required to give them a receipt because you need to help them figure out how much this thing was worth that we gave to you. So this is the one time when actually it is legally required for the donor, I'm sorry, for the donee to give the donor a receipt. There are exceptions, however, to the quid pro quo. The token exception, if there are insubstantial goods or services given in exchange. I don't expect you to necessarily memorize all these rules, but if essentially the fair market value of the benefit isn't more than either 2% of the donation or $106, or if the donation is at least $53 and the items that the items provided bear the organization's name or logo, cost of these items is within the limit for low-cost articles, which is currently $10.60. Why the strange 53 and 106 and 1060? These numbers are indexed for inflation, so every year they incrementally increase slightly. These numbers are actually from the 2016 publication, so they have increased slightly for inflation. You couldn't readily find those numbers as to how they've increased, but the main takeaway here is that if all you're giving to someone is a keychain or a mug or something that has your logo on and it costs, you know, less than $10 or $11, that's fine. You don't have to notate that on the receipt. Now, what about something like benefit auctions? That comes up regularly. The IRS also says that if you if there is no donative intent on the part of the donor, you're not required to follow these rules. In other words, they came to an auction, the point of bidding was to buy the item. You don't have to, they didn't intend to give a donation. Now you're not required to give them this receipt that shows the fair market value of what they purchased. That's fine. They don't expect you to do that. On the other hand, I would say that my interpretation of that is that if you have, you know, you've probably been to auctions, benefit auctions, where you have a chicken dinner that goes for $5,000. You know, their purpose of bidding that was not to buy the chicken dinner. Okay, there was actually a donation intent. That should probably receive a receipt. They probably will want a receipt in that case. And that is something where you would need to indicate on the receipt that they did receive something of value. Here's the approximate fair market value of what they received in exchange for this donation. I also mentioned intangible religious benefits. That is also an exception where you're not required to give, you're not required to notate that on the receipt if you gave intangible religious benefits to the donor. You must describe the goods or services given and estimate the value of those goods or services if there are any goods or services provided in exchange for the gift. Another special circumstance that sometimes arises is vehicles. If you have a deduction over $500, if the donor is seeking a deduction over $500 for a vehicle that they donated, you do need to complete Form 1098-C. Here's a problem that the IRS kept running into. They had these organizations that would say, hey, if you donate your vehicle, we'll give you a donation receipt, you know, and you can write it off your taxes. There's a lot of charities out there that do that. The problem that the IRS was facing was that people were saying, oh, my vehicle's worth $5,000. And so the charity writes out a receipt and gives it to them. Okay. They take $5,000 off their tax return. The organization turns right around, has an auto auction to auction these off for the benefit of the charity, and they get $500 for that vehicle. Well, guess what? The charity got $500. The donor got a $5,000 write-off. Okay, that's a problem. So, or I should say $4,800. You know, somewhere just underneath the $5,000 appraisal threshold. And so the IRS said, okay, we can't be having that. Vehicles seem to be one of their main hot items. Vehicles, boats, airplanes, I think all fall under this this requirement. But 1098-C, basically a form where you need to list the date of the contribution, the odometer mileage, the year, the make, the model. And then you must tell the IRS what you intend to do with the vehicle. Are you going to sell it immediately? And if so, the donor actually can't write it off until you sell it. And then they can only write off what you got for it. Okay, so that's one option. You might be selling it. The other thing you can do is you can indicate on this form that you're going to be using it for the charity, which means that they can now write off the fair market value, whatever that was when they gave it to the charity, because there's no sale of the vehicle immediately. You can also indicate whether you intend to improve the vehicle and then sell it. Okay, obviously then the selling price and the donation wouldn't be the same. And lastly, you can also indicate that you are going to be giving the vehicle to another individual as part of your organization's ministry. So if you have a ministry to single mothers and someone in the church donates a vehicle to be given to one of these single mothers, that's fine. Obviously, there's no link there between amount sold and amount of deduction. So vehicles are something that there is a special procedure for. Unreimbursed expenses is another special circumstance that we sometimes encounter. These rules are basically the same as cash donations. If there is a unreimbursed expenses of more than $250 per donation, they would need to get a receipt. But also say that donations, here's something that some people don't realize, donations can include mileage or other travel costs for board members attending board meetings. So if your organization does not reimburse board members for their travel, this is something that they could actually be deducting is their travel expenses, mileage, or airfare, so forth, from these unreimbursed expenses. Oh, one other thing I wanted to mention on the unreimbursed expenses. If an organization has a policy stating that expenses are reimbursed upon request, the individual can no longer deduct them as unreimbursed expenses. So in other words, if the charity has a policy where they say, well, if you turn in your mileage, we'll reimburse you 50 cents a mile, 40 cents a mile, whatever, if the board member decides not to turn in their miles, technically they're not allowed to deduct them, because they had the opportunity to be reimbursed. However, they can turn in their miles, get a reimbursement, turn right around and give a donation, an unrestricted general donation to the organization. That is completely fine. They would get a donation receipt for the cash that they donated. and it would be the same to the ministries if they hadn't been reimbursed. I know, it's more paperwork. It's a bit of a pain, but I've seen that done in organizations where people will give a donation to cover their own reimbursement, and that's fine. That's a legitimate way of doing that. But again, if there's a policy where you can be reimbursed, technically you're not allowed to just not get reimbursement and then take that off in your taxes. I'm going to briefly mention charitable solicitation laws. May or may not be familiar with charitable solicitation laws. They're out there. They're kind of a pain. My firm helps a number of charities through that, trying to decide what needs to be filed and what's best for the charity and so on. In all of that, I mention it in this context because some charities, some states require certain wording on your donation receipt if you are registered as a charity in that state. For example, Virginia says, every charitable organization required to be registered pursuant to Section 57-49, which is their code section that refers to charitable solicitation registrations. Every charitable organization soliciting donations from prospective contributors shall disclose to the potential donor contemporaneously at the point of a written request, in other words, on your newsletter or whenever you send out a request for donation, or on a written receipt for donations made in response to an oral request, that a financial statement is available from the State Office of Consumer Affairs in the Department of Agriculture and Community Consumer Services upon request. In other words, on your receipts or on your solicitations for donations, you should be having this statement that for Virginia residents, they can get a copy of financial statements from the Virginia Department of Agriculture and Consumer Services upon request. You've probably all seen some solicitations where people will actually print it on their envelopes. They'll have this, you almost can't read it. You know, it's just this mass of text on there, and it's, you know, different states are listed and so on. That's what they're doing. They're complying with these regulations saying that you have to print certain things on the request. The point for the states is that they're trying to protect their donors from a bunch of organizations coming in that aren't truly charitable organizations, taking a bunch of donations and then disappearing with the money. And so they say you need to register so that we have a copy of your financial statements. So if anybody wonders if you're legitimate, they can contact us and we can send them a copy of your financial statements. Just be aware that it might be required. You might need to research that. If you're registered in states, there might be some requirements there for charitable solicitations. Any questions at this point? I know we've addressed some questions as we've gone along. Any questions that you have at this point?
I've been told that if you're serving on a nonprofit board, you can claim your expenses off your income. You see, that's how my accountant tells me. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. As a charitable donation, you're saying you can
expenses off your taxes. You take them off as expense,
mm-hmm.
travel expense, or travel where we go as
right.
a nonprofit board.
Yes.
They can be deducted.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
That's correct. Yes. Mm-hmm. Now, obviously, if those expenses are reimbursed, they couldn't be deducted. But yes, as long as they're not reimbursed, yes, they can generally be deducted. Mm-hmm. A couple of best practices that I'm just going to run through briefly here at the end. My recommendation is to issue receipts for all donations. Now, it's not required, and you can give an annual receipt. Some organizations do that simply for the administrative responsibility and so on. They prefer to give an annual receipt. That's fine. But my recommendation is to give receipts for all donations. Part of that is just because it is a point of contact that you can communicate with your donors. Issue receipts promptly. I don't know about you, but when I give a donation to an organization, and 3 months later, the check finally clears the bank, I think probably one of two things. Either, well, they really didn't need it very badly, did they? And number two, they really don't have their act together. Sorry, you know, I might be looking elsewhere the next time I write a check. So issue the receipts promptly, deposit the checks promptly. It communicates to donors that you care about their donation and you do appreciate the funding. It also helps to keep you accountable for, you know, the purposes. If you list the purpose on the receipt and then you send them a prompt receipt, it lets them remember, oh yeah, I sent them the donation. Actually, I wanted it used for a different way. They can contact you and you can get that cleared away. List sufficient details, so that the donor can tell their wishes are being considered in the use of the donation. Use the donation receipt as an opportunity to express gratitude. So a lot of organizations will do something similar to Good Life Ministries, where they will actually put a they'll put a letter in with the donation receipt, with the donation receipt at the bottom. This is printed on perforated paper, so you can tear that off if you want to, and just, you know, maintain this copy in your files for tax purposes. But you have the little personal note up there at the top that is an excellent way to communicate with the donors. This is actually an example of a receipt that's printed out of QuickBooks. So if you use QuickBooks, a lot of forms that come out of QuickBooks by default are, you know, just really boxy and they have all the lines and all that stuff. That's fine as far as the IRS is concerned. As far as the when the donor looks at it, a letter like this can be really nice, and this is possible in QuickBooks. You know, it's possible to put the header in there and the text in the body, and then this information automatically fills in from the information that you entered on the donation. So that's all I have on that. I would like to mention just a few resources that are mentioned in your hand in your handout. One of them is the let me see, ECFA's Guide to Charitable Giving, an excellent resource, and it'll tell you everything you want to know and maybe a little bit more. And they really get into the thing of can you have designated donations for an individual, you know, where's that line and so forth. They do an excellent job of that. This is actually an excerpt from that book, The Charitable Guide for Missionaries and Other Workers. It's also an excellent resource that specifically talks about how do you pay your people, how can you get donations for them, and so on. The IRS issues two publications specifically on vehicle donations. If you ever get in a situation like that, they issue a guide for charitable contributions, substantiation, and disclosure requirements. I highly recommend that one. That one's actually publication 1771. And then there's a publication 1828 that is the tax guide for churches and nonprofit organizations. I was at an IRS seminar, and the presenter held this one up and said, if you are a church or a religious organization, this is your Bible. And then he realized what he had said. He's like, well, maybe not if you're a church or a religious organization, but, you know, you get the point. This one has a lot of information in it that can be helpful for charities. These are all available online, the IRS's website, and I list the publication numbers there in your handout. If you have any additional questions, I welcome your feedback afterward. With this, I'm going to turn it back over to Kyler.
This recording and many others are available from Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. For more information, call 1-814-789-4769 or visit us online at www.christianlearning.org.